You don't want vacation to end.
But with Amex Platinum, you're already planning the next one. Because you earn 5 times membership rewards points on prepaid hotels and more booked through AmexTravel.com. So every trip to the beach, and the city, and the country, and back home again, leads to another destination. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome into another episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. My name is Jacob Rudner. I'm joined, as always, by Peter Flaherty. Peter, we're almost there. The road to Omaha is to begin soon. We are through all but 1 week of the college baseball season. Regular season wraps up this week, Thursday to Sunday. We're recording this, as always, on Tuesday. It's May 13th. How are you? We're through the thick of it. How are you?
I'm excellent. We're kind of fueling up our cars for the road to Omaha. That was a brutal, I guess, analogy, but we are almost there. Last week of the regular season feels surreal. We talked about it off air last week, but I'm kind of at the point in the season, not really wishing the regular season away because I love all the action week in and week out, but I'm kind of ready for higher stakes baseball, higher than the stakes already are in postseason play, where it's kind of like the same point in the regular season where we have all these multi-team events and neutral site tournaments going on, which are great because you get fun matchups and oftentimes good teams are playing each other. But I'm just kind of ready for that next chapter to commence. So that'll commence starting really this weekend with some of the smaller conference tournaments and championship series. But I'm really fired up. It's a super fun time of year between the tournament and the draft coming up. So we got a ton to follow and a ton to talk about.
Yeah, it gets crazier from here. As of the time of recording this, again, it's May 13th. We are just a couple days away from, for the majority of teams, the final week of the regular season. All teams are in conference tournament mode starting next week. And then the following week, it is time for regionals and so on and so forth. Super regionals the week after that. Omaha first games begin on June 13th. In the lead up, though, we've had some changes to our poll. The top 25 is different once again. A sixth team now at the top of the poll of the season. It's been one of those years, I think, you could say. It's just been, we've had a lot of change. We haven't really been able to pin down one team as the best. I think for a while it looked like Tennessee was maybe that group. But then they fizzled out. They've continued to fizzle out. We thought maybe Arkansas would have a run at the top, wasn't able to get it. We thought Georgia would have a run at the top, wasn't able to hold on. Texas had a 3-week stint, which is the second longest, tied with Texas A&M. And now it's LSU. First time LSU's been ranked number one since they won the national title in 2023. What was the main factor for you that led LSU to the top? And do you think that this is the team that can maybe stick in that position?
I know last week I said it was going to be, if I had to make a prediction, that I thought Georgia would conclude the regular season in the top spot. That obviously didn't come to fruition. But like you, I kind of thought it was pretty easy to move LSU up to the top. They took 2 of 3 against previously number 3 Arkansas, who we view in a really positive light still. They're number 7 in our current top 25. So, you know, you take a series from a top 5 team and some of the poll dynamics and results ahead of you play in your favor. And I think it makes for a pretty seamless slide up to number 1.
I think one thing for me that has stood out the entire season is just the balance that LSU's roster has been able to exhibit, whether that's the rotation where you have a guy like Cade Anderson, who in my opinion is one of the best aces in the country. You have Anthony Ianson in the number 2 spot, for my money, easily one of the best Saturday starters in the country. You have Zach Cowan coming out of the bullpen, one of the best relievers in the country, probably second or third to maybe just Dylan Volantis. And you can add another name there if you want to, but he's way up there this season. The lineup has been very good. It's producing consistently. Jared Jones has been a star. Derek Curiel is somebody who we've talked about as a superstar freshman. How much do you think that their balance will allow them to continue to stay in this role of number one? Or are we looking at a situation where the lines are so murky at this point that we could see another change again next week?
Look, I mean, we've got 1 week left in the regular season. If no disrespect to South Carolina and not to put any pressure on LSU, but if they can't go on the road and take 2 of 3 from a South Carolina team that's struggling mightily, I'd be pretty blown away. There are really no easy weekends in the SEC. Founders Park is, you know, kind of difficult to play at, but at this juncture, I think it'll be LSU that closes out the regular season in that top spot. And you touched on it, but I'm a real big fan of their depth on both sides of the baseball. They've got tons of guys who can hurt you and beat you offensively. That lineup rolls 6, 7, 8 guys deep, especially in the top half. That's a really, really high-powered group that can beat you in a number of ways. And then in the rotation, that 1-2 punch of Anderson and Ianson is as good as it gets. And that's not even to mention some of their other key pieces like Kaysen Evans. William Schmidt's thrown a lot of quality innings as a freshman. And then Zach Cown has been dynamite in relief all season. So they've got pieces no matter where you look. Pretty clearly the top team in the country at this point, and I think they've got a pretty deep run in them.
You know, you say that they have a good chance at staying at number one with South Carolina on tap to end the season, but I will point out, I think that there was nobody really who would have thought that Texas A&M was going to get swept at home to then winless Missouri. Missouri was 0-24 heading into College Station and came away with 3 wins. I would go as far as to say that that has potentially ended Texas A&M's tournament hopes. Are down to number 59, I believe, at the time of us recording this in RPI, and are just 4 games above 500. So anything can happen in this conference. And I guess I'll ask you before we move on here to our next subject, and this wasn't on the show plan, so surprise. What did you think about that? How much did that surprise you, that Texas A&M series?
I was shocked. Like, mouth agape, flat out shocked. I think if your reaction was other than that, you're probably lying. Like, we had kind of, in our projections, when we do our field of 64 each week, it'll turn to each day starting next week. But we bake in and kind of project on teams a little bit. And Texas A&M, obviously, with 10 conference wins heading into the last 2 regular season series, like, they still had work to do to reach that 12, 13, 14 conference win threshold, but we had baked in at least 2 wins last week to its Missouri series. And then we had thought that, they'd probably get 1 at Georgia and get to 13 heading into Hoover, where they'd then be in a pretty good spot. But last weekend was a disaster in every sense of the word. They're now still 10-17. Their RPI is just inside the top 60 at 59, which is a really unimpressive mark as far as it pertains to an at-large bid. They're 6-13 in quad 1 games. They're now just 13-4 in quad 4 games. This Georgia series is not only a must win, but then they need to go on a legitimate deep run in Hoover, if not win the whole thing now, to get back into that tournament conversation. Like, I mean, it all came crashing down in one weekend. The momentum it had built, all the series wins it had stacked, gone one weekend. So they're not necessarily back to like square one when, they were kind of free falling early on and fell from number one out of the rankings, but they kind of are. I'm curious your thoughts, but it's tough to spin zone this one and find a silver lining.
No, there's no silver lining. There's definitely no silver lining. I mean, I even wrote, in our SEC power rankings, which came out this morning, there's no sugarcoating this at this point. I mean, we're talking about a team that is in the running for, if not the worst preseason number one ever. And that is including, I believe it's 1999 USC, which had a rough year, but still ended up hosting. We're talking about 1991 Arizona State, which didn't even make the tournament. Texas A&M would be the first team since that team to not make the tournament after opening the season as preseason number one. This is shocking. And this past weekend kind of was the negative bow on it in a way. I mean, I think that all of the disaster that has been unfolding this year and whatever hope that they were able to provide to maybe erase that a little bit was just completely wiped out in a matter of 3 games. Can they recover? Maybe. I mean, I'm curious to hear what you think about that. Is there a path back into the field. The way I see it, it's either by sweeping Georgia, right? And then, or not sweeping Georgia, and then you have to go on a run in the SEC tournament. But rein me back in here. Is it impossible? Where are we at?
Not to cross sports here, and this one might be far-fetched, but as a diehard Celtics fan, that's like you asking me like if the Celtics can still come back from down 3-1 against the Knicks and go on a run of the finals. Like, mathematically, yeah, sure. Will they? No. And that's kind of how I feel about A&M. Like you said, they got to, one, at the very least, win this weekend series at Georgia, and then win at least probably three games, I would say, in Hoover. Or you sweep and you win two, or you lose this weekend series, and then you have to win the whole darn thing in Hoover and win the SEC tournament and storm through that field. So technically, yes, there is a path or multiple paths, which kind of feels nuts to say. Are they viable? No. Are they realistic? No. Will it happen? Also, probably not. So, you know, last weekend was so detrimental for more reasons than one. I'll be curious to see how they respond, though. It'll be really easy for them to kind of roll over at Georgia, a team that's really, really good, a team that's in a good spot for a top eight national seed, more or less set from a tournament perspective in terms of where it slots in, I would say, I guess barring a series loss to A&M. But I'll be curious to see how they respond and how they play this weekend, because man, what a kick in the teeth last weekend series was. And I will say, I know we beat up on Missouri a lot. They've kind of been the punchline in the SEC, but I will give head coach Kerrick Jackson and his team a little bit of credit. Like, you know, 0-24 going on the road, deck really stacked against you, but they still go and compete. They play really hard. They come away with a huge sweep. You know, it feels really hard to say, but you know, maybe you kind of head into next season with at least a teeny bit of momentum and something you can hang your hat on. But yeah, brutal stuff for the Aggies.
Do you though? Do you? If they don't make the tournament, Peter, I think there's a distinct possibility of a coaching search that will occur in College Station. I mean, we can call it how it is. we can talk about this as is the reality. If they don't make the postseason this year, there will be considerations in College Station, period, factually, about what the future of the program is from a coaching standpoint. Do I think it's possible that Michael Early is the head coach of the team next year? I absolutely think so. There's no doubt about that. I guess I'm trying to say is I wouldn't discount the possibility that if they don't close out the year in a way that allows them to gain entry into the tournament, there very well could be, it's on the table, for a coaching change. And if that happens, I would be very curious to see exactly what, you know, quote unquote momentum looks like. Are some of these star players that exist on that roster who are not draft eligible willing to go back again next year? If there's a coaching change, what does it all look like? And so, you know, to me, these next 2 weeks here for Texas A&M are formative from a future of the program standpoint. Am I off base here?
No, I think it's kind of a line in the sand type of moment that's incoming, whether it be after this weekend with Georgia or, you know, you wait until after the SEC tournament in Hoover to see how that plays out. But there are uncertain times ahead in College Station. I'll say the water's a little bit murky just from a certainty of everything standpoint. You know, if there is in fact a coaching change, and this isn't us at all, like, we have no intel on it. We're not, like, hitting a shoe that's going to fall. But, you know, if there is, in fact, a coaching change, it'll be interesting to see what the fallout is of that. As you said, you know, what does that look like from, like, a Gavin Grahovic coming back perspective? His dad is very vocal online on Twitter about, you know, certain things. Caden Sorrell, what does that look like? So just uncertain times ahead, I think. A series win at Georgia, though, an uphill battle would be a good place to start. But if they lose this series this weekend, I think that's kind of the final nail in the coffin, at least for the 2025 season.
I like the way you put that. You know, we're not predicting or saying that we are hearing that there will be a coaching change. I think it's the best way to put it is that at least for me, I'm acknowledging a possibility at this point, because the plain reality is that Texas A&M is below the watermark that Texas A&M has come to expect. And when you lose a guy like Jim Schlossnagel, who took you to the College World Series, and then you pick his you know, successor, there are expectations that come with that. And I think part of those expectations are that you are going to be able to guide the team back to Omaha. And then the expectation for Michael Early especially was that that would be able to happen, because they brought back the entire team for the most part from last year. It's not the same team, and I'm not trying to claim that it is, but the fundamental pieces of the group were back in the fold. And that was a very well in, like, the support that was generated for the roster that they have was also significant. So for me, I think it's just a possibility worth acknowledging at this point. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, coming into this season, obviously there were some pieces that were lost from last year's team that was a win away from a national title and guys to replace, but there's a reason why they were the unanimous preseason number one team. 41 of 50 Division I coaches that were asked said that A&M would win it all this year and be the team dogpiling in Omaha. So to go from that to now this, where they are much more likely than not to miss the tournament, it's a precarious spot. So it'll be very interesting to see how everything is navigated in the next handful of weeks.
Let's talk about that path to Omaha now. We had at one point said that Texas A&M was on that list of teams that could potentially play their way into Omaha, and I will say that was a very early prediction. Kind of an out there one based on the momentum at the time. Now that's not going to happen, but we do have a much clearer picture, I think, at this point, of the group of teams that we would consider the most likely, if you want to call it that, to reach Omaha. I want to do an exercise that we do every week over at baseballamerica.com/college, which is 8 for Omaha. Right now, every Friday, I've been publishing just an updated prediction, essentially, once a week prediction. About who I think will be in Omaha this year, the 8 teams. And it's all accurate to our bracket. So based on our last field of 64, no teams would play each other in a super regional. And I thought we could go back and forth and look at our last field of 64. So for those of you who are wondering, that would be the week 13 field of 64. Let me pull up the date for when that came out. We are looking at the May 7th field of 64 over at baseballamerica.com/college. And Peter, I think we go back and forth and we pick a field here. And we, in a couple of weeks, we look back with another podcast and see how we did.
Yeah. So I will say, full disclosure. Well, actually, no, I'll start off and just kind of pick our first team. Are we going to do 4-4? Or are we going to do 8-8? I feel like 4-4 is probably we can blend our field here a little bit.
Yeah, let's do 4-4. Why don't you start us off?
Sweet. I'll start with LSU. I feel like it's an appropriate place to start. They're our newly minted number one team. It's a team we've long viewed in a really positive and in high light. For what it's worth, if I were picking a national champion today, they would be my pick. We mentioned the talent and the depth on both sides of the baseball. Get a ton of weapons offensively. Dynamic 1-2 punch in the rotation. You also throw in, you know, Cason Evans, Zach Cowan. It's a really complete team. Coach Johnson knows what it takes to get there. Coach Johnson knows what it takes to get there and win there, there being Omaha. They've just got a lot of things going for them right now. They're starting to play their best baseball, I think, at the perfect time. I see them winning. I see them at least getting to Omaha again and winning it.
Should I go with a more surprise pick, or should I should I knock out an obvious one? What do you think?
I go with one more obvious one, and then we can get into our spicier ones.
All righty. I'm going to take Auburn, and I think that a couple weeks ago that would have sounded like a little bit more of a spicy pick, but I don't think it is now. I mean, this is a team that has really started to catch fire. They're up to number 2 in RPI, which is a big deal. They also are number 3 in our SEC power ranking, but you and I have liked them for a really long time. It's a well-constructed roster, great blend of transfer talent, and freshman newcomers. They've vastly exceeded expectations, but they've kind of proven at this point, in my opinion, that they're for real. Dismantled South Carolina last week, a couple of historic wins over there. I don't see what's to stop this group. I really like their path. I think that their path will continue to look pretty good with a top eight national seed for us. This is a team that I think can do damage. And so I'm going with Auburn.
Yeah, that's a good pick. And, you know, you kind of hit on all the positives surrounding them so far. But again, I think when predicting these eight for Omaha and talking about, you know, who has, I'd say the pieces to sustain a run, you look for balance and you look for depth, especially in the mound. And Auburn offensively really stands out. True freshman Chris Rembert has been outstanding. He's hitting a shade under 360 with 19 extra base hits, probably a USA guy this summer. Ike Irish, probably a first round pick this summer, potentially a top half of the first round pick, hitting 345 with 13 jacks. And then you've got a handful of supplemental pieces like Eric Avera, Chase Frelick, another standout freshman, sitting 340, Cooper McMurray, a veteran, big-time left-handed juice in his bat. Like, it's a really deep lineup. And then on the mound, Sam Dutton, actually a former LSU guy, has been kind of a revelation for him. Through 13 starts, he's got a 2.85 ERA with 85 Ks, so just 13 walks. He's been excellent anchoring the rotation. Freshman Christian Chatterton has not pitched like a freshman, and I mean that in the best way possible because he's thrown the ball really, really well. And then they've got a handful of bullpen arms I think that they feel really confident going to. So I like that pick. I'm with you that I think that they're going to be really tough out in June. They've got what it takes to sustain a run to Omaha. So I'm with you there. For my next pick, I'm going to lead off, I guess, the upset train. Okay. Maybe depending on who else you have, but I'm going to go with Northeastern. Yeah. I know, just given who they're matched up with, because for context, in our most recent field,
week
64, they were the 3 seed in Fort Worth, which is the number 16 overall seed, TCU, as of last week, paired with then top national seed, Texas. Texas probably won't be our number 1 overall national seed come tomorrow, but for the sake of the exercise, in last week's field of 64, Northeastern would hypothetically be heading to Austin with a regional win. But I've got the Howlin' Huskies. They've been, I think, one of the more underrated teams nationally this season. They are 41-9. They are 22-2 in the Coastal Athletic Association or Coastal Athletic Conference, whatever it's rebranded to. They're in the top 30 in the RPI. They've won 20 straight games, I believe, since their series loss at Hawaii in March. They are something like 37-4 or something outlandish like that. They are absolutely rolling through their competition. They actually have a really intriguing midweek game, tonight down at UConn, another team that I think can really play. But, Coach Glavin has done an excellent job. And I think that on the pitching side, they're probably, speaking of underrated, they have one of the most underrated staffs in the country.
ERA leader in the country.
Yeah. Avan Cabral, Will Jones, really solid strike throwers. They're not going to overwhelm you from a stuff standpoint, but I think in a trait that's become increasingly rare in today's game, they really know how to pitch. And they know how to stay off the barrel, get good hitters out. I'm a fan of them. And then offensively, they're kind of led by the quartet of Cam Maldonado, Harrison Feinberg, Jack Goodman, and Melo Musasha, who are their 4 leading hitters. But Maldonado is a fun player with tools. Feinberg has been a bit of a revelation this spring, enjoying a career year. Jack Goodman, same deal. And Coach Glavin just knows how to win. They've been the popular upset pick, I'd say, really, you know, every preseason, every year they make the tournament. They haven't gone on that Cinderella run yet. I think this is the year. So I got the Huskies.
And you've been bullish on them the entire year, it feels like. It's not the first time that we've talked about Northeastern and its potential on this podcast. My turn. You know, now it's tough because I don't know if I want to go with another upset. I'm going to, though. Out of our 215 set, which includes Georgia, Louisville, Austin Peay, Central Connecticut, Oregon, Arizona, Cal Poly, Sac State. I'm going to go with the Ducks. I think the Ducks get out of that pod as we have it projected right now. They're just really hot. And one of the things that we've talked about on this podcast, I think it was one of my final thoughts a couple of weeks ago, was that we really just wanted to see Oregon prove it. There was never, I don't think there was ever a doubt that they had the pieces to be good. I think we needed to just see it actually happen on a field against another team that was going to challenge the Ducks. And we didn't have an opportunity to do that early. They didn't really play a very tough non-conference schedule. They only faced a handful of solid teams early on in Big Ten play. And then you have the series against UCLA. You have the series against Oregon State. They sweep both. This is a really legit team. And I'll add, Mason Neville is a bona fide player of the year candidate for us at this point. If not the front runner for the award, he leads the nation in home runs. Grayson Grinsell has been excellent at the front of that rotation. So for me, that is easily one of the best teams in the country. And I just think that the pod that they're in is favorable that they were in the week 13 update is favorable that for them to make a run.
Yeah, good pick. They haven't made the College World Series since 1954. They've come so close to breaking down that door to Omaha in each of the last two seasons. They've won their respective regional and lost in the ensuing super regional. So I'm with you all the way on the Ducks, and you kind of hit on the key points with them. Mason Neville, Player of the Year candidate, Golden Spikes candidate, and they've got some fun pieces around him. And then Grayson Grinsell and Colin Clark, Grinsell being the anchor. But Colin Clark is a solid number two starter. Jason Reitz, you could throw in as your number three starter, really unique kind of unicorn-y look coming at you from 6'10", 6'11", whatever he's listed at. It's like he's releasing the ball in the batter's box, and they've got a handful of bullpen pieces as well. And I think one of the X factors for him is what iteration of Cole Stokes they'll get in relief, because from a stuff standpoint, he's a super, super live arm. Like, it's big time stuff, legit heater up into the upper 90s, pairs it with a sharp breaking ball. And if he can locate, he's darn near untouchable. But the if he can locate part is also a factor, because the command can get a little spotty. But he's really, really dynamic in the back end of the bullpen. They've certainly got the pieces for an Omaha run. I really like that pick. Let's see. We're up to four teams now. So I'll go with, I'd say, a relatively safer pick, at least just given our last two, and go with Florida State. Yep. Who last week was our number three national seed. Very, very impressive club. Coach Jarrett has done an outstanding job since taking the reins of that program. Right now, just from a resume standpoint, they're top 10 in RPI. They've got a top 40 strength of schedule. They've got 11 quad one wins. And I think, we talk about bona fide aces of respective teams. They've got a bona fide ace on a national scale in Jamie Arnold, and potential number one overall pick, Jamie Arnold at that. He's been excellent this spring, 2.2 ERA with 82 Ks and 61 innings. Joey Vellini has been really, really good as well in that rotation. And so is Wes Mendez at times. Mendez has taken a little bit of a step back recently, but he kind of reverted back to his early season form this weekend at Cal. Turned in a quality start. So you've got three, I'd say, rotation options you can feel really confident in handing the ball to. Really confident. Jamie Arnold certainly falls into that bucket. I'd be confident with Vellini. And I'd say also a certain degree of confidence with Wes Mendez. But offensively, if we're going to talk about the Player of the Year award and Golden Spikes finalists or potential Golden Spikes finalists, it's led by Alex Lodis, who's hitting over 430, 16 doubles, 16 homers, 61 RBIs, looking like a top two, top three round draft pick. And Gage Harrelson, veteran outfielder, has been really good atop that lineup. Drew Ferreau was on an unbelievable heater, still is, but I wish I had the exact stat because it's worth referencing, but
12 straight hits.
It looked like he'd been playing MLB The Show on beginner mode with like a massive PCI and 95 mile an hour fastballs coming in.
Yeah.
Like, at a snail's pace, but you've got him. Max Williams can really, really swing it from the left side. He's got plus power to the pull side. Miles Bailey has the most raw power of any freshman in the country. So, I mean, that's six or seven guys right there combined with three solid rotation options. You know, that they certainly have the traits of an Omaha team, and not just a team that can get back there like it did last June, but I mean, they're for me on the short list of national title contenders as well.
Whenever we've needed a new writer here at Baseball America, we've used Indeed. Indeed has helped keep us organized and on track and has provided a wide array of qualified candidates. When we need to hire, Indeed is our partner in finding qualified candidates quickly. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your jobs post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. That's one of the things I love about Indeed. Indeed allows us to not just get qualified candidates, but do it all within the Indeed website. It keeps it organized. I can reach out to people. I can send that follow-up message all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
You don't want vacation to end.
But with Amex Platinum, you're already planning the next one. Because you earn 5 times membership rewards points on prepaid hotels and more booked through AmexTravel.com. So every trip to the beach, and the city, and the country, and back home again, leads to another destination. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/withAmex.
Great pick. I have talked about on this podcast several times before how much I like that rotation, especially Jamie Arnold, who I have voiced support for as my maybe number one overall pick in this very weird, confusing draft. Certainly, you know, the most you know what you're going to get type guy, you know, of the college pitching crop, in my opinion. It's a great team. I am going to go back to the SEC. I know that that is not what our listeners, or at least some of our listeners, want to hear. But I'm going to go with Arkansas, and I know that that fan base will be happy because we hear about it when they're not. I think this Arkansas team is really, really good. The rotation with Zach Root and now Gage Wood, who has gotten healthy after a shoulder injury and has a what opposing coaches have described to me as a 70 fastball, clear 70 fastball. You got Landon Beidelschieze, who's been, you know, good to great. Their lineup has been as potent, and we've said this before, as any really for them in the last, say, decade under Dave Van Horn. This is finally the team that looks like it's going to be able to hit its way through the postseason, not just pitch its way through it. And that completeness continues to give me confidence. Have they been at their absolute best in recent weeks? No, they've lost 4 series since April 1st. It's been cooler. They've kind of been one of the up and down teams in our poll, as high as 1, as low as 10, but they haven't gone below 10 at any point this season. It's just been kind of a dance within that top 10. So I think the consistency will come. I think being able to play some non-SEC teams in the first round will actually be good for Arkansas to kind of get its feet back under it and get out of the pressure cooker that is conference play. Last year, that folded them. This year, I don't really think that that's going to be a problem, just given all of the things I just said about having pitching depth and a lineup that's really going to be consistent and going to punish mistakes. And so for me, Arkansas still feels like a reasonably safe pick for 8 for Omaha. And this is now still, 2 weeks out from Selection Monday.
I'm happy that's the direction you went, because if you didn't go Arkansas, I was going to my next pick. I'm happy you didn't go with a team they're matched up with, because then that put me in a bind. But you hit on everything with Arkansas. They're currently number 7 in our top 25, but you know, just due to poll dynamics, that's kind of where they have to move. But I don't think there are 6 teams that are better than Arkansas in college baseball, just full disclosure. And I know I talked about it with Florida State and a short list of national title contenders, but Arkansas is also on there as well for all the reasons you hit on. It's depth and talent on both sides of the baseball. The Aloy brothers have been just mashing all season. Charles Davlin has been unbelievable atop the lineup. Cam Kojal also in the midst of a career year. The list goes on and on and on. I think the difference this year with Arkansas than in years past, and we've talked about it at various points in the podcast. I think we've probably talked about it in each of the last few weeks, but in years past, it seems to have been lack of offensive firepower that sort of led to these early exits in June. This year, there's no such thing. Now, like baseball is so unpredictable. It's the most unpredictable sport on the planet. So, I mean, who knows? Their bats could fall silent in a regional and, you know, they could be done like that. But this year, more than any year past, at least recently, I feel really confident in that lineup being able to hit. And when you pair that with the rotation of Root, Beetlesheese, and Wood, Gabe Gackel's been a lot better in relief than he has been in the rotation. And they've got some other pieces around him who can throw the ball really well. So I'm with you. I think that this is a really complete team.
All right. Where are we at? We have 6 teams. Is it 6 teams?
Yes, we are at 6. Oh, you just won Arkansas. Yeah. You're so up. I'm going to go with, I think we're each eyeing that 7-10 and 8-9. Area. Not.
I'm very curious where you're going to go here. I want to let the people in on something here real quick. We did not plan this, the style with which we're going through the bracket right now. So I have no idea who Peter's going to steal, and we are doing it accurate to bracket. So you may go.
I'm trying to see if I want to like put you in a corner here a little bit.
Okay.
Or not. I'll be nice and not put you in a corner.
No, do it. Put me in the corner. Entertainment business, Peter. Put me in the corner.
I can't do it. I can't do it. And you'll know why, but I'm going to go with Florida.
I was going to do that. Okay, go ahead.
But I think again, this is probably a not so popular quote unquote upset pick at this point, because when the Field of 64 comes out tomorrow, our next iteration of it, they very well could be hosting. And then, you know, they're not a 2 seed anymore. Sure. And at this juncture, it's also not really much of an upset pick, just given how well it's been playing. But in early April, this was a team that more or less looked kind of dead in the water. Obviously, their at-large hopes weren't dashed, but they were in a really tough spot. The injuries had been piling up. They're still dealing with injuries. But since then, they've really flipped a switch. They're fresh off of taking 2 of 3 at number 2 Texas. They've also got a series win against Arkansas under its belt, a really good series win against Mississippi State. Ever since that sweep, home sweep against Vanderbilt, they flipped a switch, and they've played themselves in a really prominent position. They're top 15 RPI team. They've got a top 5 strength of schedule. They've got 15 quad 1 and quad 2 wins. And the fact that they've done that with how many injuries have piled up is remarkable. And it's been a lot of the puppies, the younger guys who have stepped up and assumed bigger roles, and they've played really well. Brendan Lawson, offensively, true freshman, hitting over .320 with 22 extra base hits and 54 RBIs, and kind of on the opposite end of the age spectrum, veteran transfer Bobby Bozer has also been a key cog. His 14 home runs lead the team. And then on the mound, Aiden King has just been sensational. He's not pitched like a freshman. 3.29 ERA with 55 Ks and 52 innings. And then obviously Liam Peterson, your guy atop the rotation. For my money's worth, the top pitcher in the 2026 draft, though we still have eons to go before we even start talking about that more in depth. But he's been outstanding, just like a classic horse. You can ride all the way to Omaha. 3.80 ERA, 85 Ks and 59 innings. And then there are some pieces in the bullpen who have been, you know, flat out nails recently. Jake Clemente, Billy Barlow's thrown the ball well at times. Luke McNeely, Phil Pott, you know, it's pieces on pieces. And Coach O'Sullivan, again, the experience factor, like this is a team that you can kind of pencil in for Omaha. It feels like year in and year out, they've made it now in each of the last two seasons. Last year, they came out of Stillwater and went on this remarkable run through Stillwater and Clemson to get there. This year, their path on paper will probably be a little bit easier than that. Just given the fact that it's looking like there's going to be a Gainesville regional, but yeah, it's a team that's got that has it all going on for it right now. And I think that they're going to continue to play really good baseball and go on a deep run.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a team that was 1-11 in conference play at one point. It was the worst start to conference play in program history. And they have a lot of different contributors too. Interesting rotation though. That would be the one thing that trips me up when I look at that Florida resume and I see it looks all shiny and they're playing really good baseball lately. The one thing that would have given me pause that I had to pick from that bottom super regional pairing would have been whether or not Florida has the arms to get through the postseason. Pierce Kapala is back and he is their de facto. Last week, he was their de facto Friday starter. He's able to give them two innings. I would imagine this week he'll be able to throw, you know, 55 to 65 pitches in an outing. He's got an extensive injury history, hasn't really been able to sustain being on the field for a long period of time. Their bullpen, like you mentioned, has been pretty good recently, but I would say that the only guy that they have a real, you know, solid feel for, you know, they know what they're going to get is Jake Clemente. You know, guys like Jackson Barbary, a freshman, have contributed, but hasn't, you know, it's just the lack of experience is big there. Christian Rodriguez is somebody who was a prospect at one point in high school, now coming back from Tommy John surgery. They use him a lot, probably the equivalent of their best lefty, because they really don't have any left-handed pitchers who they're throwing out of their bullpen, and he's throwing tons of changeups. So it's an interesting team. The momentum is there. Kevin O'Sullivan does have a history of just figuring out a way to get to Omaha that I think is important to recognize as well. They've already been two consecutive years in a row, including a national title appearance in 2023. So yeah, it was a good pick and probably where I was going to go there as well.
Full disclosure, I will say if there are any Clemson fans that are listening to this podcast, they'll be probably annoyed at me saying this. I was very, very close to picking Clemson until I like blurted out Florida. I was wrestling mentally with whether it be them or Clemson, but well, take us home.
Yeah. First of all, you didn't pick them, so it doesn't really matter, but I will say this to Clemson fans. Check out what Peter might pick starting tomorrow. This is going to be May 14th. In the morning, we'll be publishing our next iteration of the Field of 64. So all of these matchups that we're talking about right now may not apply to next week, and a path could change. So you never know, Clemson fans. Peter may let you in next week. Taking it home here, we got the 7-10 Super Regional combo teams available. Vandy, Georgia Tech, Iowa, Oral Roberts, Tennessee, Wake Forest, East Tennessee State, Missouri State. It's a really tough one to pick from. I'm not going with Tennessee based on their recent momentum. Wake really scares me because they've also been inconsistent. Georgia Tech kind of scares me because it has been inconsistent. I'm not sure I was in the field for me for next week, and that basically leaves me with Vandy. I don't know that I would pick Vandy based on every path, but in this one, I would. They've also played really well. They're up to number 3 in RPI. JD Thompson's actually starting to look like a serious college ace at this point. Their lineup has been okay. Sometimes it has shown, you know, an above average instinct and the ability to be athletic and run. That's really when they're at their best. I had a conversation with head coach Tim Corbin a couple weeks ago, where he basically said that this team is different. You know, the home run is not going to be what saves this group. It is going to be just station to station, more old school ball is what he called it. And I think that they've executed that well. And so based on the path and the recent play and the RPI and who they're beating, I'm going with Vandy.
Good pick for all the reasons you listed. I'm with you. I think in this path, if it so happened where it was Vandy against Tennessee again in a super, I would find it hard to imagine that Tennessee would lose a best 2 of 3 again to Vandy, but for all intents and purposes, this path is also going to look different. So I think just when talking about Omaha teams in general, Vanderbilt certainly fits that mold, and I'm on board with you in picking them. So I think I like our field. It'd be a fun field.
We would recap it real quick. We got LSU, Auburn, Northeastern, Oregon, Florida State, Arkansas, and Florida. That's five teams from the SEC. We got one from the Big Ten, which would be nice for that conference, one from the ACC, and one from the Coastal, by the way, Athletic Association. You, I believe, called it the Colonial, or we weren't sure.
They said Coastal Athletic Conference. I butchered it.
Okay, yeah. Survey officially says that that is Coastal Athletic Association, CAA. All righty. Let us move forward. We got a newcomer report to take care of. It's been a minute since we've been able to do one of these. Every time we have a new team that enters the top 25, we try and highlight that new team. They were a final thought a couple weeks ago. UTSA is into the poll for the first time this season. Southern Miss also rejoined the field, but we don't do newcomer reports if you've been in already. Southern Miss, though, is having an excellent season, competing for the Sun Belt title. This UTSA team has kind of flipped the script, though, in its conference. Why don't you tell us why? What got UTSA in for you?
Yeah, I it was a team that we had been kind of angling to put into our top 25 for a couple of weeks now, and this week it worked out just from a pull dynamic standpoint where they were able to slide in to that 25 spot, and deservedly so. They've more or less ran through the American this spring, and kind of a sign of the change of times, more of a, I think that this weekend series win at East Carolina at Clark LeClaire Stadium in front of the Jungle, that's kind of a metaphor for changing of the guard, I'd say, in the AAC. And it's been all UTSA this spring. And from a resume standpoint, they've got the look of a dynamite two seed and a team that nobody, if they are sitting there on Selection Monday and they hear their name announced and UTSA's name announced, they're going to be really bummed out that they're in their regional, because it's a really talented group. But top or 21 in RPI, they are very, very close to crossing that landmark 40 win threshold. They've got 11 quad one and quad two wins. It's a team that is led by Mason Little, who's been just dynamite for him. And it's an older group, and I think that there's a lot to be said for experience when it comes to these high pressure, higher stakes games in a tournament setting, in a regional setting, and kind of keeping the heart rate down and not letting things, you know, unravel and having the game get too fast. So I think it bodes well for UTSA as they head towards the postseason. Its offense is definitely ahead of its pitching at this point. I'm kind of curious to see from a depth standpoint how they handle things on the mound. Robert Orlowski has been their go-to guy. You'll probably see him twice, if not three times, in a regional, depending on how everything shakes out. He's made 20 appearances this year, 57 Ks in as many innings pitched. But I kind of wonder if they have the pitching depth to sustain a little bit of a Cinderella run. But really fun season, really, really great season nonetheless. And they're going to look to put somewhat of a bow on it, at least pre-regional, with an AAC conference title.
Yeah. All righty. Let's keep on plugging through our podcast here. Real quick, I wanted to look at the hosting bubble, because it's overwhelmingly feeling SEC heavy to me on a couple teams that we think are kind of around that range. And we don't need to spend a ton of time on this, because after all, we are, you know, still in the process here of constructing another field of 64, but just to give people a, you know, kind of a flash preview of some of the thoughts that we're going to have, I wanted to talk to you about the following teams, the SEC host bubble teams, if you will. Florida, which we just gave an extensive preview of, Tennessee, which we've also kind of talked about on this podcast, Ole Miss and Oklahoma, four teams that are all hovering around the 15 to 27, I believe, is Oklahoma. The bottom of that group, let me just confirm that real quick. 26, I was close. So that range in the RPI. And I would say for me right now, Florida would be the team that would be in of that group. T- Tennessee probably the next closest, if not in, and then Ole Miss, Oklahoma closer to out than in for me. But I could see as many as maybe three of these teams hosting and as few as none of them.
Yeah, it's an interesting hosting bubble. Like the SEC could end up with as many as, I'd say, eight hosts, nine if you want to get really bullish on it. But tiering them out, and I'll start on opposite ends of the spectrum. Florida for me right now, if the season ended today, is a host. We'll see if Jacob and I agree on it when you read tomorrow's Field of 64. And then on the other end of the spectrum, Oklahoma. Like, I think that I find it hard to envision them hosting a regional at this point, just given everything on its resume. So then you meet in the middle with two teams, Tennessee and Ole Miss, and they're kind of neck and neck. Tennessee's got the RPI edge, and every other meaningful metric, Ole Miss has the advantage. They've got a top 10 strength of schedule. Their non-conference strength of schedule is markedly better. It's not some powerhouse non-conference strength of schedule, but just for the listeners, Tennessee's non-conference strength of schedule ranks 216th nationally, and Ole Miss's ranks 90th nationally, so more respectable. Ole Miss has the edge in quad one wins. Tennessee has the edge in cumulative quad one and quad two wins with 17 to Ole Miss's 15. So I think for me, it's going to come down to those two for potentially.
Put a number on it. How many would you say right now?
How many SEC hosts?
Yeah, oh, that, yeah, do that. How many SEC hosts right now for you?
Let's see. I the listeners are going to annoyingly hear me count this out because I'm staring at everyone's RPI right now. But Georgia's one. Peter. Auburn is two. Not saying Auburn is two nationally, counting number of hosts. Georgia one, Auburn two, Vanderbilt three, Texas four, Arkansas five, LSU six, Alabama seven, Florida eight, and then one of Tennessee and Ole Miss. So I'll say nine when all is said and done, which is an unbelievable mark. Just
so not too bullish. You've got,
yeah. So just given the fact you've got 16 hosts, the SEC's got nine of them, 10 right now in that conversation. It's an ultimate testament to the talent in that conference. But what say you? Am I too bullish on the SEC? Is the committee going to snub both Tennessee and Ole Miss, or two of the three of Florida, Tennessee, and Ole Miss? Or are you also with me on the nine hosting train?
So I'm gonna give a shout out. I was on a podcast in the Ole Miss part of our country, in Ole Miss territory, and I was asked, "Is Ole Miss going to host?" Plainly, I was asked, "Is Ole Miss going to host?" And I said, "If the season ended today, I think no, but I don't think it's impossible. I don't think that the world has ended even after last week's situation against Mississippi State. They have Auburn to close out the season here. This is an opportunity, if you win this series, to put yourself in the conversation. I would say for me, it's either 9 or 10, Peter. I think we're looking at 9 or 10. I think that this is the year that the SEC runs the gauntlet. You know, 14, well, not anymore, 13 teams probably into the tournament field. Texas A&M could pull off a miracle and make it 14. South Carolina and Missouri are both completely out of the picture at this point, unless they win the SEC tournament. We're talking about, of those 13, 10 teams that are top 18 in RPI. It's pretty undeniable to me. And we know that the committee values that stat. And I don't think it's a good stat. Like, this is not me trying to come out here and say this is indicative of who's good and who's bad. I think RPI is inefficient in doing that. This is me saying, I think that the committee values certain things, and part of those certain things is the RPI. And that stacks up really well for the SEC right now. So does the strength of schedule for the conference, which is something that the committee considers. And so all of these things together, who these teams have to play, their records, their RPIs, you're looking at a potential for 9 or 10 hosts, and I think that that's a whole lot more reasonable than the 14th team at this point. I don't think that 10 teams is actually that unreasonable. That is the takeaway for me right now. Am I predicting 10 host seeds? No, not necessarily. I think 9 more likely than 10.
Yeah, but where it'll get really interesting is this weekend, because I think if Ole Miss wins its series against Auburn, that probably pushes them. It would definitely push them across the hosting line for us, and probably for the committee as well, And then if Tennessee loses its series at Arkansas, what that does to his hosting chances, and then what happens if they both win or they both lose. I don't think both winning really makes all that much of a difference from an Ole Miss perspective. I think that just pushes them across the goal line again. But if they both lose, I'd be curious. I think that would be tough for Ole Miss to overcome, at least from a hosting perspective. So I'm with you. There's a non-zero chance we end up with 10. This weekend is really, really important. And I think that, again, the Rebels are right there. And I think that they're two wins away this weekend from almost cementing its hosting status, but a lot easier said than done given the opponent.
Let's get into our final spots here on the show. It's time for picks to click. Peter, I'm growing to hate this. I'm growing to hate this part of the show.
Now you see why I did.
Picks to click has not been kind. It was my baby to start the year, and then I decided to split it into first half, second half, and now I'm getting dominated. Peter picked Jacob Morrison, the right-hander from Coastal Carolina last week against ULM, and he was outstanding. Six innings pitched, one hit, no runs, one walk, six strikeouts. I had a good pick, too. I went with Brian Curley, the righty at UGA, and he, against the University of Alabama on the road, I should say, and I hope Carlos Collazo is listening to this because I should have been the one to be selected. Five innings pitched, two hits, three runs, two of them earned, four walks, and nine strikeouts. Peter got the win. Peter is 3-1 in the second half, so I'm getting dominated now. Is it 3-1 or 4-1?
I want to say 4-1.
It's 4-1. It is 4-1. You're right. So it's a disaster.
Like last week, though, I think I'm mathematically out. So I congratulate you on your...
You're not. It would be 6-5 now.
Oh, wow. All right.
Actually, no, it wouldn't. The math is not mathing here. We're through 13 weeks of the season. So we're going to have to figure this out after the show about where exactly everybody stands. But the bottom line is Peter is running away with it in the second half. We are picking hitters this week. And then we are going to restart, just so everybody knows, for the postseason. We're going to hit one more refresh and do a postseason version of Picks to Click. So for the final time in 2025 regular season, who is your hitter?
Yeah, the postseason won't be a lot of fun, but I'll close out the regular season and select one of my favorite hitters in the 2026 class and go with Mississippi State's Ace Reese. He has had an excellent spring for the Bulldogs since transferring in from Houston. Sitting 351 with 15 doubles, 17 home runs, 60 RBIs. Looks the part of a potential top half of the first round pick in 2026, assuming he continues to perform. It's a really intriguing hit power blend. There's present bat speed, a really enticing offensive profile. And I think that he's going to continue to swing the bat well this weekend in the Bulldogs' final series at Missouri.
This is to take away some sort of moral victory here. You've already won the second half. I can't catch you. but to maybe feel good about myself, I'm going with Miami third baseman Daniel Cuvée,
nice.
Who's been a rock star in recent weeks. Had six at bats 2 weeks ago, Peter, and I believe four of his five hits were for extra bases. He's really turned it on, and we've talked about him on the show before. A guy who has some of the best power in that 2026 class, only a sophomore right now at Miami with one more year before he becomes draft eligible. And he's become a real leader for a team that, kind of like Florida, its in-state foe, went from completely out of the tournament picture to very much on the bubble and now kind of teetering between that 2 and 3 seed line, but surely in the tournament at this point. And he's been at the forefront of their push. So I'm going to go with Miami's hero, Daniel Cuvée. You've got Ace Reese. And I'm sure you'll win, which has become an odd recent trend.
I respect the reverse jinx attempt by you. That's a move I like to pull out. But Cuvée's a great pick. He's been unconscious, as you said, spearheading the Miami resurgence. I know they took a little bit of a step back last week, but in the grand scheme of things, in the second half of the season, they've been outstanding, and so has Cuvée. So this is a fun matchup for the final week of the regular season.
All right, Peter, it's your time to shine. It's time for our final thoughts of the final regular season podcast of the year. You had a great one last week. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I should have saved. I should have kept this one in the holster for next week's final thoughts, given the proximity on the calendar to Selection Monday. But I'm curious to see what the committee does in a couple of weeks, or now less than 2 weeks away from Selection Monday, just which metrics it's clear they value from a hosting standpoint when the hosts are announced next Sunday night. And then also from a bubble perspective, which teams are left off, why they're left off. It's always kind of a fun piece of the puzzle each year to see and kind of get a peek under the hood as to what they value. It helps us out going forward in our discourse. So I guess my curiosity about the committee is growing, and it'll be more so next week after we have a much clearer picture or not so much clearer, not really a much clearer picture, but yeah, I guess my curiosity about the committee is the general theme both this week and in the lead into Selection Monday. So I got to really get back to the drawing board and come up with a good final thought for next week, because this would have been perfect then, but I had to use it.
All right. Okay. My final thought, Peter, is draft focused. I am super curious as we head into the home stretch of this 2025 season, which has had a lot of change at the top. We've seen some new teams jump up six times. We've had a change at number one. Our top 10 has changed almost every single week. And so too has the draft board. We've seen a whole lot of movement about who's the number one prospect, who's the projected first overall pick. There's high schoolers out there like Seth Hernandez, right-handed pitcher from Southern California, who's supremely talented. There are shortstops. There are pitchers at the college level, but I think nobody would tell you that they know for sure who's going to go with that first overall pick or who the true number one overall prospect is for this upcoming draft. I have a hunch that we're going to see somebody emerge in these next couple weeks, in the final weeks of the college baseball season, and really grab the opportunity that still exists very late in the calendar for the number one spot. We're talking about a time of year that puts college baseball on the biggest pedestal that it can possibly be on, and in a results-based industry. And to quote our coworker Carlos Collazo, in a field where it matters what you've done for me lately, I think that there is going to be a postseason star from a Liam Doyle or a Cade Anderson or a maybe even a Jace Lavoillette, depending on how he closes out his year and what Texas A&M is able to do, who's able to propel themselves into that number one spot and really use the spotlight in a way that is beneficial to their careers. And I'm curious to see exactly who it is that does that.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean, we saw it a few years ago with Cade Horton, how he propelled himself into the number eight overall pick. And this year, where it's as murky as ever, especially at the top of the draft, there's plenty of room for guys, all the guys you mentioned, like, you know, especially those college arms, Kyson Witherspoon, Liam Doyle, Cade Anderson, Jamie Arnold. If any of those four teams go on a run to Omaha, it's more likely than not going to be on the backs of their horses at the front of the rotation. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Similarly, like Ivar Ket at Oregon State, if Oregon State goes on a run to Omaha, which it very well could, Ivar Ket is probably going to be swinging the bat really, really well in producing at a clip. At a similar clip as he has been all spring. So there's a ton of volatility at the top, more volatility as you get, you know, through the first round even more. So there are a lot of unknowns from a draft perspective, but certainly room for guys to improve their stock as we get into postseason play.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. As always, we encourage you to go over to baseballamerica.com/college to check out all of our latest college content at this time of year. Like I've been saying for weeks now, it's an everyday thing, multiple stories a day sometimes for the remainder of the season. We're projecting brackets. We're talking about player of the year candidates. We're breaking down the draft. We just released another mock draft and updated the draft board to 400 names. So it's a super busy time of year over at Baseball America. That's where all the coverage is at. But we do thank you for joining us on the podcast every single week. And we will see you next time in the postseason.